It is the first day of Pride Month. It's also the first time that Boston will host a Pride parade and a full slate of official events since 2019. Also, the first time those events are being organized by Boston Pride for the People. They've replaced the longtime nonprofit steward of the annual Pride Parade, Boston Pride, which you might remember dissolved in 2021 after a year of missteps and long-term criticism over its lack of inclusion of people of color and trans members of the LGBTQ community. Events kick off tonight at City Hall. So let's talk about the return to a full slate of events, how we got here. Joining us here in Studio 2, Adriana Bolin, president of the Boston Pride for the People and director of community impact and engagement at Fenway Health. Welcome here to Studio 2.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. Also on the line, Ariel Gray, WBUR arts and culture reporter. Welcome back, Ari.
Thanks for having me again, Tiziana.
It's great to have you. Adriana, I'm going to start with you. Tell us a little bit about the first event tonight.
Well, tonight we're really excited to support the City of Boston, who has their flag raising at 4 p.m. And they are also our Portraits of Pride. Our colleague Jean Dolin will be featuring that. And we're excited to be in their presence with all our other community stakeholders and leaders in the community supporting today's flag raising. Excited that it will lead up to next week's activities.
I want to. Portraits of Pride are such a magnificent art installation. So tell people just a little bit more about that.
I love Portraits of Pride. And I'm thinking now of my colleague, Dr. Ken Mayer, who is one of the folks that are pictured from Fenway Health. But Portraits of Pride since last year has been such a great way to share the expression and the faces of people in our communities, the LGBTQ plus communities. We're such a diverse, rich, delicious group of people. And I love to see all the different spaces and faces that make up our community and our experiences in that work.
And just a note for listeners, when the first Portraits of Pride installation was first set up, we did a conversation with the curator and a few people whose portraits were featured. We can link to that on our website at radioboston.org. Ari, what are you watching most for in this year's formal events now that we're returning for the first time, and I'm not ignoring the pop-up events that have happened in the last couple of years, but this is sort of a formal return. What are you most looking for in these events?
I think ironically, this is kind of the year that I'm taking off from Pride. It's just so much going on and so many amazing things going on in the city. But this month, I'm kind of taking a little break. And, you know, one thing that I do try to go to every year is the Trans Resistance March. That is the one event that I try to make sure that I show out for. So probably that.
I want to peg the Trans Resistance March because kind of there's a shape to the conversation I'm hoping we're going to have in the time with the three of us together, which is where we are, how we got here, a little bit of the history, which will include the emergence of trans resistance, the events of the last few years, and then kind of the planning for tonight. I'm really glad that you brought that up, Ari, and I'm going to come back to you in a minute for a little more of that history. Adriana, Boston Pride for the People, founded in 2019. Some may know there was pushback around the name because Boston Pride still existed then. Now officially involved, sort of in charge. What is the feeling, the character, and the spirit that you want to make sure Boston Pride for the People imbues, if imbues the right word, in everything going forward?
Love that question. And I just want to take a step back. Boston Pride for the People was started last September 2022. What existed before was Pride for the People, which was one of the many groups that arose to develop what didn't exist in our city so that members of our city and our community could be seen. So Pride for the People was one of many efforts in addition to trans resistance that was birthed out of us seeing that what needed to be in our city and how we needed to feel and be seen didn't exist. And Pride for the People was a group of several stakeholders, a part of different organizations that came together to hold Boston Pride accountable. And when that accountability wasn't seen, there continued to be work about, okay, well, what happens now? What do we do in our city? And so last year in 2022, after several events and initiatives from a lot of different groups and organizations, a number of us came together to develop Boston Pride for the People. And when I think of what we want to imbue in all the work that we do, I think of our four principles, which is to commemorate how this started. Pride started as a riot. It started because people were being mistreated. We were standing up. There are a lot of people that we want to commemorate. Marsha P. Johnson. We can name so many different people in our community. So one principle is commemorate. The next is educate. Our communities are under attack, and people need to understand that that still exists. It might look different for many different of us, depending on our experiences, our privilege, our identities, but there is still work to be done, and people need to know that there's still, we need to educate. So commemorate, educate, empower. We need to be given the tools and the power to carry out that work. And part of that involves people seeing that that work needs to be done. So empowering. And then the fourth, celebrate. Pride is a month where we want people to be able to tap in and celebrate in whatever way feels most comfortable and great to them. And so I loved Ari saying, you know, I'm taking a break from Pride this year, but I'm definitely going to the Trans Resistance March. Our aim is for our city to have spaces where people can see themselves, wherever that might exist or be. So those are really the four tenets, the four principles at which we hope to imbue all of our work.
On this first day of Pride Month, we're speaking with Adriana Bolin, president of Boston Pride for the People, and Ari Gray, WBUR arts and culture reporter here. Ari, you just heard Adriana say that Pride started as a riot. So let's go back and take us through a bit of history from the first Pride to the events of 2020 and 2021 that led to the next moment of reckoning for Boston Pride, for the Pride festivities in the city of Boston, et cetera.
I would say that, you know, the first official Pride here in Boston was in 1970. And it was a small group of people. They walked from the Cambridge Common to the Boston Common. And of course, Stonewall had just happened the year before. That was the impetus. Yes, in New York. So that was the impetus for all of these folks in Boston getting together and walking, marching, taking a stand. From there, the Pride in Boston, the Pride movement in Boston grew as it did across the country. There are a lot of fascinating points of history concerning Boston Pride. I mean, there's a lavender rhino in there, if you guys want to research that and take a look into what the lavender rhino in Boston came to represent in the 1970s for Pride. Boston public school students protested at one of the Pride marches in the 80s to basically advocate for more support for LGBTQ+ students in Boston public school systems. So it's always been a place of resistance for our communities to show up for ourselves, for each other, and to demand more for our communities. So that's kind of like, I guess, the background of Pride. And getting into, you know, what happened, I think, more recently when the pandemic started, it's just so much. It's a lot. But to give you the short end of what happened, you know, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor in 2020, and lots of organizations were putting out statements, basically statements of support, taking a stance against police brutality, against institutional racism. And Boston Pride, as an organization, put out a statement that was really poorly received by community members, mainly because they had omitted some pretty important sentences from the statement that had been drafted by volunteer workforce members. And some of those statements were things like, we stand with Black Lives Matter, we stand against police brutality. And those changes were done without any sort of conversation with a volunteer workforce. And of course, there was a backlash. Boston Pride canceled its events for that June. And they kind of said that they were taking a step back to interrogate some of the internal racism that was going on in the organization. However, you know, that didn't really happen. And the volunteer workforce came back and demanded that the board resign and demanded that the organization change in ways that promoted an equitable, an equity in power. So there were certain bylaws that allowed board members to stay on indefinitely. They had a lot of power in the organization to kind of just do what they wanted. And that, along with a lot of racist micro and macro aggressions that folks experienced while working with Boston Pride, the volunteer workforce decided that it would be best for the board to step down and for changes to be made to the organization as a whole. However, those demands were not met either. And then we have, of course, the clash over the names. In October of 2020, Boston Pride sent basically cease and desist letters to Boston Pride for the People and also Boston Black Pride, because they wanted ownership of the Boston Pride name, which is a completely different conversation. Like, who owns Pride, right? So just, again, a lot going on here. Eventually, we get to June, when Linda DeMarco steps down as president of Boston Pride. And then in July, Boston Pride officially announced that it was dissolving amid a boycott that many other grassroots LGBTQ plus organizations in Boston had joined, basically boycotting Pride, Pride as an organization as a whole. Sorry for that.
No, that's great. So that's Ari Gray, again, WBUR arts and culture reporter, giving us that piece of history. So that dissolution happens, if that's the right word, in 2021. We come forward to now with this new creation of Boston Pride for the People, responsible for these events that are now formally launched again by the city of Boston and in our community in 2023. I want to pull forward a couple of things. A number of other organizations really emerged in that interregnum, right? It made space for other organizations to emerge. One was Trans Resistance Massachusetts. One of the things I want to talk to you about, Adriana Bolin, who's the president of Boston Pride for the People, back in February, the interim president of Trans Resistance Massachusetts, who's Julia Golden, told GBH that they hadn't heard new organizers say a lot about race and gender at that point. And we know that this is at the heart of part of the changes over the last few years. So address that and talk about putting race, gender, trans members of the community front and center, and underscoring that in the history Ari Gray was just telling us about, there were decades where the formal sort of out front recognized movements in the LGBTQ community were run by white people, claimed by white people, and taken forward by white people.
Yeah, absolutely. When you ask that question, I think about our commemorate and our educate principles. That commemoration is, one, our acknowledgement of this is where we came from. This is how we started. This is the foundation that we are, as a community, continuing to celebrate and build pride on. So from the commemoration standpoint, we're aiming to not forget that. We have a lot of both intergenerational conversations and conversations with our older and aging adults in our community of all different identities and abilities, to ensure that we're both commemorating and supporting our generations of people participating with us. The next one that I think about is educate. As I mentioned, there's so much, our community is under attack in so many different ways now. And that was the case before 2020. That was the case before what we're seeing in legislation this year and before. And so we're talking about it. And we're addressing it. We're having community conversations about this. We're ensuring that as we plan our parade and festival, that we are amplifying and uplifting these communities. So at our festival, at our Boston Common location, we have a marketplace where we're specifically featuring and uplifting QT BIPOC individuals and BIPOC individuals and LGBTQ organizations as well. So we're doing that by having folks present and selling their products, where all of our performers and speakers are people who are a part of the community, who work towards missions that are supporting our communities. And so we're continuing to do that work. And also we're inviting and asking the community about what we can continue to do. We're trying to create a structure and framework that's malleable and that the community can tap into and support. So we're also being open to the community, letting us now know what we can do to continue to live into our mission. And we want the community to be a part of that. So we want to create something that people feel like they can actually approach and be a part of.
So I'm going to keep going with us for a little bit longer. I'm going to bring that music in the background back down because I have a couple more questions that I want to ask. Actually, I'm going to stay with you, Adriana Boland. So here we will say thank you so much and goodbye to Ari Gray, who's the WBUR Arts and Culture reporter. Ari, I know you are on a clock and have some interviews that you need to do out in the field. So to be respectful of your time, I want to thank you for taking a little time out to join us and give us that history and perspective. Ari, thanks so much.
Thank you guys for having me again.
So, Adriana, a couple more questions just to sort of come back to the organizing and events over these next few weeks. One of the things that we talked with Boston Mayor Michelle Wu about was the tension in how to think about police presence. Because, A, you just talked about the attacks, we're seeing hate groups show up at drag queen story hours. We're seeing threats on the LGBTQ community. We also know that there are members of the community who are concerned about a strong police presence and safety. How are you thinking about that safety and security balance in these public events to keep people feeling safe and also free to celebrate?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. We've been working with Boston Police to have two open conversations. The two points that you just said, one, everybody needs to be safe and secure, and our community is especially under attack. And we want to make sure that we see an acknowledgement and awareness that there are experiences that our community members have had with people who are police officers and continue to have that may impact how they feel when they're present. And that awareness has allowed us to have conversations about how we can both keep members of our community safe while the Boston Police Department will be there, as well as other members of the service there. We also have private security and we have peacekeepers so that we're able to use different methods and approaches to addressing situations. So we want to stay safe, and we want to promote safety. You know, safety means different things to different people. So we can't ensure safety when we don't know what that means to someone, but we can promote a space where our community is secure. So we will have folks there, and we also want people to acknowledge and understand why people feel the way they feel, and be open to working with us to support people feeling safe and secure in many different ways, both physically and emotionally.
And then the last question, over the last few years, criticism has increased of corporations for sort of taking Pride 1 month a year and using it for revenues, and then not making investments in the other 11 months of the year to support the LGBTQ community with real solidarity. So what's the right way in your mind for corporations either to or not to engage with Pride Month this year thoughtfully?
As we've been talking with different corporations and partners, we've talked a lot about what we call genuine allyship. And how we assess genuine allyship is via criteria where we assess if a company or organization has supported anti-LGBTQ or anti-abortion legislation. We look at where there are a number of different indices, like the HRC index and the As You Sow index, that identifies how a company supports their employees who identify as disabled or identify as another race. So we use those indices to determine someone's allyship or fitness for partnering with us. And when we notice that they're not fit in that way, we have an actual conversation like, hey, we looked this up and we saw that you supported this legislation, and while you personally may not have known that, it's important that you know that now and know that we're not able to partner with you in this way. And if in the future any changes are made and you address this support that you've done to harmful entities, then we might be able to engage in the future. So it's following that criteria, sharing that criteria with our community. We've gotten a lot of positive feedback about it, but if it ever needs to be adjusted, we're open to doing that as well. So just really holding folks accountable to that.
All right. First day of Pride Month today. First events begin. Flag raising is at 4:00.
Yes.
All right. Where can people find out more?
City Hall Plaza. And if you want to hear more about Boston Pride for the People, visit bostonprideforthepeople.org.
Adriana Boland is president of Boston Pride for the People. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We have been talking about the first day of Pride in Boston and how organizers are planning for it to be more inclusive for all members of the LGBT community. But that's a month. creating more inclusivity isn't limited to the month of June. It's an effort that's being spearheaded year-round in all aspects of Boston, of LGBTQ life in the city. And as you heard in previous segments that we've started talking about here, especially after dark, and we're going to talk more about that now. Here to do that, we have three voices. First, on the line, Curtis Santos, who is the founder and executive director of the Boston Lesbigay Urban Foundation. Curtis, thanks for dialing in.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. And then we have two guests here in the studio. Dominic Diggity Dom Glod is a musician, producer, and DJ. And Dil Yance is the host of Issa Vibe, a monthly BIPOC LGBTQ nightlife event in Boston that's hosted through the organization LGBTQ Nightlife Events. Dom, welcome here in studio too.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Dil, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
All right, let's have a conversation. So I'm actually going to start with a little bit of a sound from the last conversation we had about nightlife. And this was with Thais Rocha, who's the head of LGBTQ Nightlife Events, through which you're doing your work, Dil. And Thais is trying to launch Danny's, which is a lesbian and queer bar that's set to open in Boston at the end of the summer. If and when it opens, and I don't mean to say if, Thais says they are on track, it will be one of fewer than 30 lesbian bars in the entire country. And Thais talked about the bar trying to be a more inclusive space for the LGBTQ community and why that matters so much.
A little over 10 years ago, I went to my first LGBT event. And at the time, I wasn't really out and I felt happy there. You know, it wasn't, I don't even know how to explain it, but it was just a feel like an overwhelming emotion of, wow, this is where I belong, not necessarily, you know, in a club or at a party or something like that, but with the people in the community.
So let's start there, Dil. You host, you founded Issa Vibe, which is a monthly nightlife event. And I've seen some of your TikTok. I've heard you talk about this. That's kind of the goal, yes?
Yes, absolutely. So Issa Vibe is this idea that is coming to life, that is have life breath into it, where the community has a home. And I, someone who was not from Massachusetts, coming back home to the state, where was my community? Where was my people? I couldn't find them. I went to everywhere, every twix in between, and I didn't see anybody that truly looked like me, where I could express and be myself naturally without having to look over my shoulder and think, oh, are they looking at me a little sideways because I'm dancing my heart out and I have no cares right now. So when I was trying to think, what can I bring to the city? What can I do? And this is where Issa Vibe came to life. Sitting down with Thais and Tia, my partner T, we were all just talking about what is it? What do we need more of? What is the space that we're trying to create? And this is how we are here.
Dom, you're a musician, you're a producer, you create music, you're a DJ. Do you remember sort of the vibe the first time you were in a space where you felt like, this is where I want to be, this is how I want to create, this is the community I want to create for, this is it for me?
Yeah, definitely. I'd say like the introduction to that probably was actually my high school, Boston Arts Academy, because I felt like I wasn't really in a space where I could be myself prior to that. I was in the medical program. They bussed me out to the suburbs for school. And, most of the time, the only people of color were the kids on my bus. So then to also find out that I was trans as well and queer, it was a really tough time in that community. So being involved in the music and then the scene of just being able to be comfortable in myself opened up a lot of doors. We got to perform at different events. And as I got a little bit older and got into college and got connected with Blue, I felt like as an adult, that was the events that I had with Boston Urban Pride, Boston Lesbian Gay Events, those felt very accepting as an adult as well, to feel like, okay, now I have a space that I can be myself and then meet other people in my community to then engage, collaborate, network with. And then Boston Glass was a great resource as a youth that needed events and entertainment. They had the balls, and it was my first time being able to see a lot of kids, you know, from my school, from other schools, be able to just do all the different voguing moves. And, you know, it was like, I was like, wow, this feels right. This feels where I'm meant to be. So being like a musician and entertainer and having my own company, Diggity Dom Entertainment, I've been trying to also create different events and spaces for creatives that feel safe for everybody to just engage and have a good time to be their own creative.
So it's a perfect chance to go to you, Curtis Santos. Blue is you, right? And, you know, we hear Boston Glass, we hear these others. Those are investments. Those are people, organizations, people with resources saying we need to create spaces, physical spaces, conceptual spaces, you know, safe spaces. How does the whole community step up and create these spaces? What are the key investments and who needs to make them, Curtis?
Thank you for the question. You know, you said, you know, when you first started, you said blue is you. Actually, blue is the community. You know, we really center our focus around community needs and efforts. And that's how we actually got started, by listening to the community. They asked for something, we delivered, and from there, we're just continuing to provide the access. And when we talk about access has to be given on a local level with our city councilors, our mayors, anyone who's in the position to make power moves for us. And so as when we first started, we sat down with numerous of folks and said, hey, you know, we don't have space. We don't have access. How can we create this space? And we had a lot of doors shut, but we continued to fight and say, you know what, our voices need to be heard on multiple levels. And we continue to advocate and from there we begin to actually be seen. Visibility was beginning to show, and I really want to shout out our deputy director Elakeisha Spencer for continuing to provide this space for our community, and I thank the community for trusting in us to be able to, an asset to them.
So we're speaking with Curtis Santos, that's the voice you just heard, president of Boston Lesbian Gay Urban Foundation, Dil Yance, who's the host of Issavive, which is a monthly BIPOC LGBTQ nights event, and Dom Diggity Dom Glad, who's a musician and producer and DJ. We are specifically talking about BIPOC trans LGBTQ communities and creating space. It is the beginning of Pride Month. But that's a month. And what we're talking about is a lifetime of ambition to create a more complete, safe, and welcoming Greater Boston. We've spoken with Boston Mayor Michelle Wu on this before. We've spoken with the head of tourism. We've talked about the new nightlife czar. We're talking about what it takes to really change. So, Dil, I'll come back to you. I'm actually, we don't often play sounds of people to themselves, but we really, really wanted to do this because this is a TikTok of you last summer. You're answering a question that was submitted by someone who talks about being nervous going out to events. Here it is.
If I'm working the door, if you see me around at the event, why don't you come up to me and say, hey, like, I did come alone. Did you meet anybody else that came alone? Because what I'll be proactively doing is asking if anybody else came alone as well that night. And then I can link you guys up. I've done it before at my events, and I've seen people leave with lovers and friends. So don't be shy. I got you. Just let me know so I can support you in the best way that is most comfortable for you.
So what I'm thinking of is two things while I'm listening to that, and you're cracking up here in the studio, right? One is Curtis just saying, it's not me, it's the community. And the other, you know, I'm talking about investments and spaces, but that's spirit, Dil. It's all about the spirit in that.
Yes. Oh, gosh, I just remember that was an excellent flashback. Every time the events were happening constantly, I'm afraid to come alone. I don't know anybody. I am still figuring out my sexuality.
I want to note Dom is nodding this whole time.
Yes, where is the space for me? How can I fit in? I am nervous. And I said, that is okay. We have all been in the same exact space, and that's what Issavive is for. You're just here to vibe. You're here to just be organically as natural as possible, however you choose to show up. And that's what I encourage. So then at one point, I was buying wristbands, and I was like, okay, red is going to be, I'm taken. Blue is going to be, I'm looking for friends. Yellow is going to be, okay, like, I see you over there, right? So then people are coming to the door like, well, can I take more than one band? I'm like, oh, no, you need to be I want you to stay firm to what you want tonight. Are you here for friends? Are you here for lovers? Are you here to just vibe out? Pick which one. And it was very interesting to see people go, okay, I am here for friends. I'm going to pick friends. I was like, good choice. And then they would look around. You'd see everybody looking around their wristbands. I'm like, So it was, that's where the community was building in itself. And that's where I was like, this is my home. This is the space I want to keep bringing for people to know that you can come to these events alone and you will leave with somebody, whether that is with me as a new friend to you, as that is me introducing you to somebody else, you are not going to leave alone. And I love that's the spirit that is happening within Issa Vibe. And honestly, across the board with all of our events and outside of LGBTQ nightlife events, I always hear and I see people saying, I've met somebody. And that is the spirit and the heart of what we're doing here.
So, you know, there's an element to, and this is my word, right? You might like this word, you might not like this word. There's an element of curation to all that. You're curating the whole experience and the event and the way you want people to experience it. And as I was listening to you, Dil, and I'm turning to you to ask a question about this, Dom, what I was thinking about is all the conversations we are having about our musicians, right? And how we are losing spaces for practice and nightclubs mm-hmm. that musicians can grow and perform in and emerge in, right? This emergence of talent in Boston. And as we get more expensive and we lose the chance to develop, well, our musicians curate spaces too. Our musicians create vibes that people either feel like they can show up in or they don't. And I'm going to be honest. I have not, that I can remember, in one of those conversations asked, are we losing musicians who create spaces for our queer community, for our BIPOC and trans LGBTQ community? So let's talk about that. As we squeeze our musicians, we're squeezing in this space too, Dom.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like as a musician, it's been very interesting because, like, on the flip side, before I transitioned, people seen me as a female drummer. That's what people knew me as. And, you know, that had its own stigma behind it as well. When I would go play church gigs and I'd get different looks hopping on the drums, but then I'd have to just work extra hard. And then kind of when I went through my transition, then I started to pass more, then, you know, that stigma kind of started to drift away. But then I'm like, okay, well, yeah, yes, I'm presenting as a man. Yes, I identify as a man. However, I still acknowledge that I'm trans, and I need to kind of put that out there so that as I create other spaces, people know, like, hey, like, wow, this person has something similar to me. Like, they are trans or queer. Like, I feel comfortable being here. Sometimes I don't even disclose necessarily unless I feel safe and comfortable. Yeah. So, you know, that's like, you know, one-on-one on online or whatever, you can find what you want to find. But, you know, if we're in person, I need to make sure that I'm safe before I can, you know, say anything personal about what's going on. So I feel like, you know, especially since the pandemic and stuff, things have gotten a little tough for everybody, especially LGBTQ. And I've noticed, I've spoken with other artists, especially in the LGBTQ scene, that are feeling like they're only getting booked for Pride season.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, sure, Pride is great, but we have to pay our bills like all year round. If somebody is trying to be an artist, you know, 24/7, they need to be getting bookings and being treated equally across the board. So, you know, I feel like I've been trying really hard to create these spaces. And, you know, me and Curtis and Keisha were in House of Inspiration. We're trying really hard to make this happen, but it's one step at a time.
So with that wisdom in your ears, Curtis, give one piece of advice to listeners who hold power about something they can do differently in the next, not 1 month, but the next 12 months, Curtis.
I think it's time that we sit at the table and have a bigger, larger conversation, especially with the new nightlife director that they just appointed in the mayor's office. I think that we are losing all of our queer BIPOC spaces, I would say. There's nothing that's BIPOC in the city of Boston that's affirming to us. And I think that what's happening is that we're conforming, and which we should not be conforming anymore. We should be feeling validated and affirmed in spaces that we go into. So I think that my last note would be, let's sit down with BIPOC leaders and have a bigger and broader conversation on how do we advance nightlife in the city of Boston. as we should be having to.
All right, Curtis Santos of Boston Lesbian Gay Urban Foundation, Dilyance, Issa's Vibe, monthly BIPOC LGBTQ nightlife events in Boston, and Dominic Diggity Dom Glod, musician, producer, DJ. Thanks to all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.